This is day five of the 2009 Idyllwild Bible School. Our second period teacher is Brother Matt Norton. His general topic is the life of Lot. Today's topic is honesty. Brother Matt.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. How are we holding up? Yeah, pretty good. All right, well, this morning, this is where, I guess, the rubber hits the road, so to speak. Is that a colloquialism you have in America? It is. There you go. We share some things in common. And what I'd like to do this morning is lay everything out before you in regards to what I believe the scriptures are telling us in terms of the life of Lot. This is how I read it. This is how I see it. This is how I smelt it when I turned the pages of the Word and tried to decipher for myself what Lot's life was really about. Now, you know, some brothers said to me at the beginning of the week, how can you speak for a whole week on Lot? Well, we're getting there, aren't we? And you may not all be agreeing with some of the things that we're representing Lot to be in his attitude towards the truth and so forth. So I'm going to present this to you today and see what you think. And it's all about honesty. We have a saying in Australia, another one called get real. You know what that means? Get real? Well, the exhortation at the basis of everything we're talking about this morning is get real. Get authentic. Be true to yourself. Say what you really, really mean in life. In a world where, you know, millions shift from side to side to please their frowning peers, people who are looking at them, those who are, you know, influencing them, they say what's expected to say. Brothers and sisters, say what you mean. Say what you believe in. And I believe this morning this is probably one of the biggest problems we find in Lot's life. So I'm at school. I'm in year 10. I don't know what you guys call that. I'm in year 10. And there's always that group at school who are the real rebels in regards to drugs and alcohol and parties. I wasn't involved with that. We come to the truth a little bit before that. But I just remember this one fella who was involved with his mates who got into these type of things. And he didn't want to be involved, but, you know, you just do what your peers do. The pressure's too great, isn't it, sometimes, to turn aside. He was going nowhere fast, and his parents sat him down. They were pretty well-to-do, and they told him, you are going nowhere fast. You've got to get your life in order, buddy. And he's already looking for a way out. So he decided that he'd stop smoking the drugs. He decided he'd stop drinking, and he decided he'd stop going out to all the parties, and he'd knuckle down and he'd do some study. Now, what do you think his mates said to that? Because he still wanted to hang around them, but just not do what they did. What do you think his mates said? You're no friend of ours. They actually ejected him from the group. They said, go hang out with somebody else. Go hang out with the girls if you want to be like that. And so he was forced out. And you know what? That type of stand, that type of honesty did. It changed his whole life. By year 12, a couple of those kids had to go and do some terms in juvenile detention for actually stealing things in people's houses. He wasn't a part of that anymore. Being honest, brothers and sisters, can change your whole life. Now, if I asked you, what is Lot's biggest problem? We looked at his second biggest problem the other day, didn't we? Which was that? Or did we suggest was Lot's second biggest problem? Covetousness. What's his biggest problem? Yes, he's not being honest with himself, and he's not being honest with people around him. And let's just return to the meaning of Lot's name. Can anybody remember it? It means to veil. Now, what is a veil for? What do you put a veil on for? To hide something from view, don't you? That's what you wear a veil for. To hide something. And what I believe that Lot was hiding, as I believe that he was hiding the fact that he was a Hebrew, that he was righteous, and that he loved God. This is what I believe. This is how I read the story of Lot. And what we want to do this morning is see whether or not we can reinforce this, whether we can maintain this assumption about Lot's life. Is it true? Was he really like that? Did he really not stand up for the truth like maybe I was taught in Sunday school? And I don't believe he did. I believe he veiled himself and he covered it up and he was secret about it. Now, I just want to show you something. We'll go to 2 Peter, please, brothers and sisters. Have a look at 2 Peter chapter 2, again, where we look at Noah and Lot. And let's just read this now a little more perhaps carefully. We read of Noah in verse 5 of 2 Peter chapter 2, where it says, "And God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly." And then he goes in on to talk about Lot, and in verse 7, "He delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy way of life of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day." So we've got two people here that are in some ways compared, Noah and Lot. Just reading those verses, can anybody see the difference between Noah and Lot? Exactly. Noah is a preacher of righteousness. It's outward. Everybody knows Noah's building a boat. Everybody knows when Noah does an exhortation, what does he do an exhortation on? Flood. Rain. Every time. Haven't you heard that before? Every time he goes to the exhortation filing cabinet, he goes, look under F, pulls out the one on flood. Everybody knows that. That's Noah. But Lot's different. Lot, it says there, vexed his righteous soul. He saw it and he heard it. Doesn't say he said anything. He was in acute mental affliction. It was all inward. It was discreet. It doesn't say Lot manifested anything about the truth of what he really thought. But it was giving him stomach ulcers, brothers and sisters, because he kept it all in here. Another translation puts it like this. "He did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, herald of righteousness, and Lot, for as that righteous man lived among them day after day, was tormenting his righteous soul. Noah tormented other souls by the words that he spoke." The only one Lot tormented was himself. Now, I believe that, but as we said, can we maintain this assumption? Now, just have a look at one more quote. We'll come back to 2 Peter. Matthew chapter 10, please, brothers and sisters. In Matthew 10, I believe this also is Lot's experience. Lot didn't look like he was standing aside from the city building. Not at all. Lot looked like he was enjoying his time making money in Sodom. We go to Matthew chapter 10, and we see there, Christ is talking about being open with what you believe, about confessing in verse 32. "Confess me before men. And if you do, I'll confess also you before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me, I'll also deny." Now, what happens if you start confessing, brothers and sisters? Your truth, your beliefs in a violent world. Will you have peace? Will you be persecuted? You probably won't have peace, and people probably bring a sword and they might attack you. We don't get it like that in this world, but you certainly may not get peace. Look at the next verse. Christ says, that's the point in verse 34, "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. If you confess me, you won't have peace now." Not like that. "I came not to send peace, but a sword. I am come to set man at variance against his father and the daughter against her mother and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." Brothers and sisters, "and a man's foes shall be they of his own household." Does anybody know when Lot's household became a foe to him and when he was at variance with his wife and when he was at variance with his sons-in-law? When was that? It was when he confessed Christ, wasn't it? It's when he stood up and said, "This is all wrong. The whole thing's wrong. I've got to change." and his whole family looked at him in horror. And we'll see that tomorrow. He that loveth father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And Lot, verse 38, had to learn to take up his cross. Now let's just think about some of the things in Lot's life. And what we're going to do is we'll look at these things by way of comparison, or if you like, contrast to another great man who lived in his time, his father Abraham. So let's look at the first one. Think about this. Genesis 19. We're going to go through a few quotes this morning, brothers and sisters. So in Genesis 19, we know the story, and it's not something which we're going to deal with this morning by way of expounding. We're just going to pick up some highlights in Lot's life and compare them to Abraham. This is the story. The men have beset Lot's house. They're outside, and they're banging on the door, trying to kick it in, trying to get to the men that are inside. All people from all quarters of the town, not from one little pocket. This is all of Sodom. It was a disgusting, immoral place. And Lot, we know, he offers his daughters. We'll look at this tomorrow. In verse 8, don't do this to these men that have come under the shadow of my roof. And verse 9, look at the surprise reaction of the men of Sodom. Stand back. And they said, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now we will deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. Now, brothers and sisters, I don't believe before this Lot had ever spoken against the city, ever. And scripturally, there's no evidence that he has ever spoken against the city or the men of the city or the ways they acted in the city like this before. We know he sat in the gate, but we'll look at that again tomorrow too. Sometimes we see him there like a prophet. You're all sinners. God's going to judge this place. I don't believe that, brothers and sisters. Get out of the way, they say. This man came in to stay a while. You came in here dwelling in tents. And what, now you're going to judge us? In fact, see when Lot says in verse 7, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. I don't believe he's ever called anyone in Sodom wicked before. This is the first time, and his blood's boiling up inside him, and he thinks, I've got to make a stand. He knows these men are special, probably from the camp of Abraham, possibly doesn't know they're angels, but he's going to put his life on the line, and he opens the door and says, you're wicked. Now, who also thinks the men of the city are wicked? Where have we read anybody thinking the men of the city are wicked before this, which is what Lot is now in harmony with? Can anybody remember? Judges? Oh, just in Genesis, I mean. Just in Genesis. Isn't that chapter 13? Have a look at chapter 13, brothers and sisters, when Lot separates from Abraham. This is the time he separates from Abraham, and Moses writes in what God really thinks about Sodom. And Moses tells us in verse 13, after Lot has separated, but the men of Sodom were wicked, sinners before Yahweh exceedingly. And finally, scripturally, for the first time, Lot stands up and says, I agree with my heavenly Father. You're wicked. And he suffers persecution, as we'll see tomorrow, because of it. They give him a high, and you get out of here. Who do you think you are to judge us? You've never talked like this before. You wait till we're finished with these men to see what we've got in store for you. And it's all hit the fan now. Lot is in big trouble. What's he going to do to get out of it? But before this, I believe he had veiled himself. He was silent. He hadn't said a word. That's Lot. In fact, there's a very, very interesting verse in Amos chapter 5 and verse 10. Now, you don't need to go there, but look what it says in Amos chapter 5 and verse 10. Speaking about people who would sit in the gate and they would rebuke those who are doing the wrong thing. They hate them. He who reproves in the gate. I got a question. Is there any indication that anybody hated Lot before this? Why was there no animosity towards Lot before Genesis chapter 19? I think I've got the wrong quote there. Before Genesis chapter 19, why is there no one hating Lot? Because he was quiet, he was silent, he saw, he heard, he vexed his righteous soul, but the veil was over him. They didn't know he felt this way. He might have had a furrowed brow and looking really stressed, but they didn't know why. He's a businessman. Poor Lot. He's in the gate, I believe, to wait for the salvation of God. He wanted to change. He wanted to say something. He wanted to come out and say, I'm standing as a Hebrew. I'm not going to build the city anymore with you. I believe in the kingdom of God on earth and the covenant and the promises made to Abraham. I'm actually part of that. How many times have we had the intention to do something like that? He had good intentions, brothers and sisters, but he just couldn't get it out. I believe it was veiled. And it's actually like 2 Corinthians. Have a look at this. You know the quote, 2 Corinthians chapter 3, where the veil was over Moses' face. He'd just met with God. He comes down off the mountain. His face is glowing with the glory of God. And if you saw the glory of God in Moses' face, wouldn't you want to run towards it? Well, you would if you're faithful. But if you're unfaithful like Israel, you'd be in absolute horror saying, no, no, hide it. So what did Moses have to do with the glory? He put a veil over it. Why? So Israel couldn't see. And it's a two-edged sword, this veil, because as Lot veils himself so other people can't see him, it also blinds his own eyes to what's really going on in his life for so long. And Israel also, it says in 2 Corinthians 3, in verse 13, and not as Moses, which put a veil over his face, that the children of Israel could not steadfastly look to the end of that which is abolished. In other words, he put the veil over his face so they couldn't see the glory fade, plus they were scared of it. But, verse 14, their minds are also blinded, for until this day there remaineth the same veil untaken away in the reading of the Old Testament. Which veil is done away in Christ? He hid the glory, like Lot hid the glory. So the question is, brothers and sisters, when will the veil be taken away from Israel? When will the veil be taken off Lot? The answer's in the next verse. Look what it says. Nevertheless, when it shall turn to the Lord, when they, Israel, shall turn to the Lord, when Lot makes his stand and races out there to those men and brings them into his house and stands up and says, no way, you're wicked. He turns to the Lord and the veil's taken off and they're surprised. What are you talking about? And the immediate reaction is, we're going to take you down. I don't believe Lot moved into the area of Sodom in chapter 13 with his tent door open to do business with Sodom, declaring that they are unrighteous and that they are wicked. What would you have thought would have happened if Lot had moved into the area and he was saying things like that? You see, honesty can change your whole life. I beg your pardon. You can get lost to where you came from. We don't want you in here. We're not doing business with you. Go away. Lot had never spoken like this before. What about another one? What about Genesis 18? I love this quote. Have a look at Genesis 18. So we learn that Lot would not have been able to quietly settle in the precincts of Sodom if he had have been in there declaring what he really thought about the men of Sodom and about their way of life and about the truth of God. He would have been completely unwelcome and immediately ejected. Now we go to Genesis 18. We know this part of the story, don't we? We looked at this the other day. The angels have come to Abraham. That Abraham's taking the angels now back on their way. The angels talk amongst themselves. And they say this incredible thing. Verse 17, Yahweh said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and a mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. Now that is an incredible praise, isn't it? I know Abraham, he's going to make sure all his kids learn about the truth. Is that same praise afforded to Lot? If it is, brothers and sisters, that's not how God has asked us to read these scriptures, not how I read it. I don't read any type of praise like that that God ever gives to Lot. Not once. Where were Lot's kids? Where were his children? Where was his family? Had he taught them the way? Had he taught them the truth? Had he stood up for things in Sodom? Brothers and sisters, remember, I'm Lot. I'm not just writing him off. Lot is me. We live in these last days that are like Lot for a very good reason. What about Genesis chapter 19? Have a look at this. Back in Genesis 19 again, brothers and sisters. This has always amazed me, this one. You would think this is your trump card. This is the ace. The angels say to Lot when they come to him, Lot, have you got anyone left in the city? We've got to go. You're waiting, you're reluctant, you're tarrying. We've got to get out of here. And Lot, he tells them, I've got daughters and sons and sons-in-laws and daughters-in-law. And he races out into the darkness at night through the city because all the other men are blind, remember, because the angels have smitten them with blindness. And he's knocking on their doors like this, getting them out of bed. Come on, we've got to get out of here. And you imagine them wiping their eyes, thinking, Dad, what's wrong? We've got to get out of this place. God's going to destroy the city. And they had never heard anything come like from Lot's mouth like this before. Never heard a word like this. And it says, and it's absolutely amazing, it says in verse 14 at the end, but he seemed as one that mocked. You're making jokes, Dad. Come on. What are you doing? And they probably wake up their wives. Your dad's at the door. What's he want at this hour? He tells us we've got to get out of the place. We can't take anything with us. We've got to go. God is going to destroy the city. And they started laughing. Come on, Dad, go on, go back home. Just take your medication, go back to bed. And it was an absolute joke. And it was just like that. It's a disrespectful joke. Why didn't Lot say to them, no, I'm serious. Right now, in my lounge room at home, I've got a couple of angels. They're standing there waiting. They've already done a miracle. Well, of course he would have said that. But that would have only intensified the situation and exacerbated the laughter. They would have been laughing their heads off. He says, honey, there's a couple of angels in his lounge room. And they would have been rolling on the floor laughing. Poor Lot was going from house to house getting the same reaction. Why? Everything in his family, I believe, every single decision he had ever made only spoke of tolerance and acceptance of the way of life for our business in Sodom. His kids had never got the vibe. They didn't understand. They weren't thinking, oh, so this is what you've been talking about for all these years, Dad, that God's going to destroy the city. They're just as surprised as the men of Sodom. His own family, brothers and sisters. Fathers? It's a sorry situation. It is really, really sad. But it's true. That's how the scriptures read to me. You know, back home, there was a brother not too far away from where we live, a brother that died, a few hours away, a brother that died suddenly. And they had his funeral, and there was probably a crowd like what the number is here today at the funeral. And the brother who was conducting the funeral stood up, and like any funeral you've ever been to in the truth, you eulogize the deceased, the one that's fallen asleep in Christ, how he was a loving brother and a great husband, and he stood for the truth, and he was incredible to his children, and all of this. And this is serious. At the back of the hall, there were some of his workmates who were sniggering away, and they couldn't believe it. They thought they'd come to the wrong funeral. They had never heard anybody talk about this man. Like, he's the one that laughed at the dirty jokes and joked about his wife, and the one that drank at all the Christmas parties to excess. And as far as they were concerned, they'd worked with him for so many years and they didn't even know that he was even religious. Can that really happen? That's a true story. I'm not making that. Where will a brother like that be in 50 years, brothers and sisters? Where will you be in 50 years? That was Lot for a long time, putting the veil over his life, and he didn't want to tell anybody about the truth. These are hard words because, you know what my problem is? I'm out there, and I'm talking to you, and I'm exhorting you on these things, and I'm thinking, boy, you better listen to a few of these words yourself. It's like that, isn't it? We're not always open about the things we believe. What about, we won't go there, but Genesis 17, we know this. Lot's not there. Abraham receives circumcision, the sign of the covenant, which covers all his family. Lot was not circumcised. He didn't receive the sign of the covenant. He wasn't brought in to that covenant. He missed out. We've seen in Genesis chapter 14, haven't we? How we believe that we suggested that Abraham had 318 trained servants, trained up like children, not just in armaments, but probably, it seems almost incomprehensible that it wouldn't be, in the truth. That Abraham had actually taught them to love God, all about the covenants, about the promises, about the stars of heaven as the sand of the sea and the seed that would come. Who had Lot taught about the truth, brothers and sisters? Who had he taught? Just show me one single passage where we're told that Lot did anything to teach anybody about the covenants which he so desperately apparently believed in. And what about this? Abraham wasn't just instructing his ecclesia, he was preaching the truth. Anah, Eshcol, and Mamre, remember those Amorite chieftains which were with Abraham? They had cut a covenant with Abraham. And I don't believe it was just a covenant to say, I'll dwell with you peacefully, because Abraham wouldn't have dwelt with them peacefully if they weren't in harmony with the covenants of truth. And I believe Abraham's brought them to the truth. Remember what they did? They risked all they had in support of Abraham's endeavor to go and save his brother Lot. Remember that in chapter 14? These are Amorites. And they weren't dwelling with the rest of the Amoritish people who Kedorlaomer had taken captive. These Amorites were dwelling with Abraham. Who had Lot brought to the truth? He must have had a lot in his family, a lot in the ecclesia when he went down there into Sodom. How come, where were the men of Sodom that were converted? Lot had lost, in the end we see his wife, he lost his kids, he'd lost all of his staff, his herdsmen, his cattle, his shepherds. None of the men of the city came to the truth. Who do you think you ought to judge us? Tell us we're doing the wrong thing. Lot hadn't converted anybody. And I don't believe Lot was preaching like Noah was preaching. Lot's got it really tough, brothers and sisters. What about us? What about us and our kids? I go down there and there's a bunch of kids who really seem like they love the truth. And you can tell they want to get excited about the truth. Mums and dads, what are you on a level of 1 to 10? You want your kids to be in the truth too, don't you? Like, are you up there with 8 or 9 with passion for the truth and tell the kids how good it is to be in the truth and go to the ecclesial hall? Or are you on level 1 or 2? Because if you're only on level 1 or 2, oh, we've got to go to the meeting again, and you fight with your wife on the way to the hall and you're smacking the kids all the time, like I do sometimes. How do you expect the kids to get on 8 or 9? We've got to get a passion and a zeal for the truth, brothers and sisters, that Lot didn't manifest like a Hebrew Abraham would have manifested. And these are really important lessons. Genesis, where are we up to? Yeah, Genesis 14, another one. Remember that when Abraham builds altars, sorry? You know what an altar is? An altar is something, like, it's massive. People walk past and go, whoa, what's that? Well, that's what we worship our God on. Well, that's probably like what we do, isn't it? We worship, no. It's nothing like your gods. Our God's so different. That's Abraham. An altar to me is like a public lecture. Where's Abraham? Genesis 12, verse 7, verse 8, 13, verse 18, building altars. How many altars did Lot build? He may have built altars, brothers and sisters, but God's written it so that we don't see any altars that Lot built. And I don't think Lot built any altars. He wasn't making himself known publicly because he was discreet and he covered it up. And we know, don't we, when he went up there in chapter 14 and he was always silent when Abraham had saved him, and he thought, now I've got the high priest Melchizedek and the name of God and the God of the covenant on this side with Abraham. Lot surely must choose to come with me, his own father in the truth, back again. But Lot didn't choose. And Lot would have heard Abraham berate Bera, king of Sodom. I'm not going to take a shoelace from you. Lot heard that. Lot saw that. But Lot didn't say anything. And when Abraham probably said to him, where are you going to go, son? Where will you go now? You're coming with us? And Lot probably turned his face in shame and said a word and went back down arm in arm with Bera, king of Sodom. We can't believe it. But that was Lot, always veiling himself. And as I said, I don't want to write Lot off, because I have had many opportunities before in the truth to preach. For instance, if you pray to God for an opportunity to preach, what is likely to happen? You're going to get it on a platter. So it was years ago, and I remember praying about it. The whole ecclesia was extremely excited about preaching. I want to preach too. So I'm at work and I'm delivering, and I come to this news agency. And it was the time, when was the, you know, George Bush Sr., when did he invade Iraq? When was all that, 95? Was that 96? Okay, well, in that time, everything was exciting. So I even had everything in my favour. And it was on the front page of the paper at the news agency. And I'm just getting her to sign the check for the deliveries that I was making. And she says to me, the night after I've prayed for an opportunity, isn't this terrible? What do you think's going to happen to the world? Look at this. Where's it all going to end? And I said, oh, yeah, thanks for the check. Put it in my pocket and said, who knows? And walked out. Are you ashamed of me? I'm ashamed of me. I couldn't believe I did that. So I'm talking about Lot not standing up for the truth, but don't worry, brothers and sisters, I'm hearing it as well. It's pretty hard, isn't it, sometimes? Sometimes we just act disgusting. God, I'll do that for you. All that we've heard, we'll do and obey. And we go out and we don't do, and we don't obey. And what about Genesis 21? Have a look at this one. It's all about choices, brothers and sisters. What about Genesis 21? Even Abraham's friends or his associates, they even said to him in verse 22, this is Abimelech. At the time came to pass in verse 22 that Abimelech and Pichol, the chief captain of his host, spake to Abraham saying, God is with thee in all that thou doest. We can even see it. You're an upright man. We know where you're heading. We know what your goal is in life. We can see that, Abraham. God is with you. Had Bera, king of Sodom, ever said to Lot, God is with thee in all that thou doest? You know what Bera, king of Sodom, often said to Lot? I am with thee in all that thou doest. And Lot never said a word. Arm in arm, back down to Sodom. Are we seeing ourselves in there, brothers and sisters? Genesis 13, see this here? I think I've got it. No, I don't think I have this one. It's in Genesis 13, but this is really interesting because these two words only occur in context of Abraham and Lot just once each. You know, we'll just read the verse first. In verse 12 of Genesis 13, see where it says, Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom? See that word for tent? That's not the normal word, the Hebrew word ohel, which you would find in connection with, say, the tabernacle, the ohel. That outside there, that's an ohel. But the guys who put it up, that's a tent, but the guys who put it up were doing the verb. They were tenting. That there, that word for tent, if you want to mark it in, is a verb. And it was that was the signal of a sojourner. That was the mark of a God-fearing Hebrew who was going to stand aside from the city building. He was always a tenter. And remember, it was the mark in verse 18 of Abram, where it says, he removed his tent. That's the same verbal form of that word, only used in those two occurrences. And Abraham, in verse 18, we are being told that he is now maintaining his sojourning life, which he's known for in Hebrews chapter 11. The stranger and the pilgrim seeking a city to come, not a city here. Remember that? Like Isaac, and not like Ishmael. Like Jacob the tenter, and not like Esau, who built himself cities. Abraham was a tenter, and in verse 12, when we're told that Lot was tenting, you can see that his days being marked out as a faithful sojourner were coming to an end, because we go over to the next page and we find that he's actually dwelling in Sodom. He's packed the tent up. All the outward show that he's separate, all the outward show that people could say, you are different to us and you worship another God, it's all gone. And I believe he's veiled himself. He's hidden the truth. And he's not manifesting the true life of the Lord Jesus Christ, as sometimes we don't, brothers and sisters. Lot was giving it all up. And we get a... In Genesis chapter 18, see this here? Sometimes we get a little glimmer of hope in the record and we think maybe this is where Lot will come good. Right at the end in this way perhaps. And in Genesis 18, when Abraham is told by God, I'm going to go and blow Sodom and Gomorrah out of the ground. If it's really bad, look what he says. Verse 20, the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous. And you might have heard, and I looked at that and I thought, the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah. Perhaps that is the cry of Lot. Perhaps now Lot's sitting in the gate and he's crying to God, come and save me, God. Now, I'm not going to tell you, brothers and sisters, that Lot's not praying, but the cry there is not the cry of Lot. Just flick over the page to Genesis 19. Because the angels now are in Lot's house, and now they're speaking to Lot, and now they're telling Lot, you've got to get out of here. In verse 13, for we will destroy this place because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord. The cry of them, their sinful cry, the horror of all of their evil deeds has come up to God. And we're not told in the scripture that it was the cry of a righteous man praying his heart out for the Father to come and save him. And I'm not saying he wasn't praying. I believe at this time he probably was, and he was stressed out of his mind, but he didn't say it out loud to anybody, and nobody heard, and nobody saw, and nobody knew that this is the way he felt. Poor Lot, just getting chained like that right at the end. And so we come to the last bit, brothers and sisters, this morning, and we've got to ask ourselves this big question. And I'm sure you know the answer. If I asked you, why do you hide the truth? And we all have our reasons, but Lot had his. Why did he hide the truth? I believe the answer is found in Matthew chapter 5. If you just turn there, please, brothers and sisters, let's just have a look at this. Matthew 5, we know this section very well. Let's just read it together. You are the light of the world, verse 14. Brothers and sisters here at Idlewild, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill can't be hid. Neither do men light a candle or a lamp and put it under a bushel. But they put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. You know what a bushel is, brothers and sisters? A bushel is an earthenware grain measure. And do you know where it's used, this earthenware grain measure? It's used in business, for commerce, and industry. And I believe that Lot had put his interests of commerce and industry over the top of the truth. And I believe that's what he'd veiled the truth in. Under the pursuit of industry and riches, he had hid the truth for what he wanted to gain in life. He knew. We've been for job interviews before. Is it hard to come out and say that you're very religious and you have deep beliefs and you will not work on a Sunday and you won't be involved in anything that's immoral? Have you ever said that? We dilute it a lot if we do say it, in order not to threaten our chances of getting the job. And here's Lot. He knew if he came down there and he started preaching the truth, there would be no riches for him. He knew that if he told people what he really thought, people would boycott his business. He wouldn't have been allowed into the city. He certainly wouldn't have been allowed in the gate of the city. He knew, brothers and sisters, that if he stood up for what he really believed, then Berah, king of Sodom, would not have made him rich. And it was only his uncle that stood up and said, "I don't care, because God's the one that makes me rich." And Lot as yet did not have enough faith to harness himself to Abraham and the truth and the covenant to come out and say it. He had veiled himself. He was silent. Brothers and sisters, what good work have we got of Lot before this chapter 19? What good thing does Lot say before chapter 19? Is there anything recorded? I don't know of any. Can you see now, brothers and sisters, how we've got to stand up for the truth? We've got to do what's right and say what's right. And you know you might get, you know, pushed to one side, neglected. You could even lose your job over something if you stand up for the truth. But I think the lesson for us this morning, the lesson that I'm hearing, is that honesty can certainly change your life.